Hi there, and welcome to the American Marketing Association Marketing Power Podcast Series. I'm your host, David Kennard, and joining me today is Richard Stockton. Now, he's a principal at Banner Witkoff, which is a national intellectual property law firm, and he is an expert in trademark and domain name law. He's an adjunct professor of law at the Georgetown University Law Center, and we are lucky to have him on board today because something new is coming down the pike that perhaps you as a marketer and or a business owner need to be aware of. It's this thing called a generic top-level domain, or GTLD. We like to make acronyms of things. And this could impact your business in the online space. So Richard's here to help us understand that impact and kind of give us a view into the future of what this might mean for businesses. Richard, welcome to the program. I guess I got to start with the most basic of questions. What is a generic top-level domain?
Thanks, David. Well, a generic top-level domain, quite simply, it's something like .com or .org that we already have on the Internet. But what's coming and what the non-governmental body that oversees the Internet is looking for is what they call the next big dot thing, which is they're going to make it so that generic top-level domains can be applied for by anyone. So instead of having 22 generic top-level domains like we have now, there could be thousands of them.
So we have 22, you said. I think most people just know about .com, .org, .net, that kind of thing. What are these top-level domains used for in business? You know, I don't think the average consumer runs across too many differences off of maybe the top four or five. How else are they being used, and how are businesses using these domains to differentiate or sell themselves?
Well, the intention, some of the others, just first of all, are they include .gov, .biz, .info, .museum, .asia, .mobi, .tel, and most recently, .xxx. So you can probably, from the names of some of those, figure out what they're used for in business. But the original intent that this non-governmental organization that runs the Internet, it's called ICANN, the Internet Corporation for Assigned Names and Numbers. Again, we like acronyms. Their original intention was to really have, instead of reliance so heavily on .com, it was to have a number of these be applicable to the industries that they represent. Unfortunately, things didn't quite work out that way. So, for example, .museum, there aren't a lot of museums that want to be .museum because, like, I'm based in Chicago, the Museum of Science and Industry, they want museumofscienceandindustry.com that everyone knows. They don't want museumofscienceandindustry.museum simply because no one has migrated to that space yet.
Gotcha. So there's a little bit of consumer acceptance that we have to consider here. Now, I would imagine that if I own a domain, and let's say if I have davidkennard.com, if all of a sudden there are more ways for these generic top-level domains, somebody could steal my name. Is that right? They could register it under a different one of these .whatevers. Is that a reality or a potential reality here? And if so, what impact does that really have for businesses?
Yes, that is a huge reality and a huge issue, and it's one of the reasons that many organizations, including brand owners, tend to be opposed to this process. Because to take a slightly better example, if your brand name is Red and you make widgets, you're going to have to go around and try to protect your brand name Red in any of these new generic top-level domain spaces. And what's happened now, I mentioned there's 22 generic top-level domains. There's also a whole bunch of country code top-level domains. Those would end in .de or .UK for the United Kingdom or .BR for Brazil. There's 250 of those. So right now, brand owners are having to police their trademark on over 270 different top-level domains. And this program, if it expands, it could add, ICANN is estimating as many as 500 in the first round, or that's about what they think will come through, about 500. It's going to double or triple or quadruple the amount of policing that needs to be done to protect your brand names in these other domains.
So let me have just a little bit of a reality check here, because I can barely remember my own phone number. How is the average consumer supposed to remember 270-plus different .whatevers in trying to find a business? Is this a lot of hype over nothing because consumers won't accept it, or do you see, or does business see, that, yeah, this is a reality that could be easily accepted, and we've got to really think strategically about this as a business?
I think it is a reality, because while it's true that no one can predict the future and whether people will migrate away from .com, there are certainly precedents to suggest that .com is not going to remain at the forefront forever, and will not be the single unitary source for internet addresses, or the one that everyone wants to have their name under. For the country codes, you're right. If you're in Vietnam, for example, .vn is the top level domain that's already in place there. There are a lot of people in Vietnam that would just simply go to the .com website, so it's not as big of an issue. And there are actually very few large companies that actually do own every domain that's possible within these top level domains for their brand. On the other hand, though, in some other jurisdictions, the local country code top-level domain can be significant. For example, .de in Germany and .uk in England have a lot of traction, and there are a lot of businesses that have sites under those website addresses. And consumers in those countries who may not want to go to, you know, a generic site that's based in the U.S. and then enter in where they're going, they go specifically to that country code top-level domain for a website. So there is some traction to it. Now, what's moving forward here with the new GTLD process is that anyone can apply to any organization can apply to start their own generic top-level domain space. So the tighter question here is whether some of these non-geographically designated generic top-level domains are going to actually be able to lure potential users to those spaces.
Well, let's explore that a little bit for the layman who may not understand how all this kind of works. You said that organizations could apply to have, you know, their own generic top-level domain. What does that mean? Could the local store down the street apply to own a generic domain, or am I missing something here?
Sure. Well, let's just give a couple of examples. Let's take the store down the street. So I'm in Chicago, and the city of Chicago has shown some interest in seeking to apply and create a .Chicago registry or a .Chicago generic top-level domain. So the thinking is, and this is actually an example raised by ICANN, that if you're a plumber, in Chicago, for example, instead of not being able to get plumber.com, you would be able to register the domain name plumber.chicago. And then when someone needs a plumber in Chicago, they don't need to do a Google search to try to find your services. They can just simply go to plumber.chicago, and lo and behold, there will be your business page. Now, there's obviously complications to that, such as, you know, which plumber gets to plumber.chicago first, or would the city actually run almost a Yellow Pages type web page there that says, okay, anyone who's a plumber in Chicago can go to this space and can list their business, and, you know, they can leave their contact information. There's a large number of questions with that. But perhaps a more interesting example, David, is .canon. Canon has been leading the way in terms of being a brand that has said, we are going to go through this process. In fact, in March 16th, 2010, they sent out a press release saying, we are going to seek to register .canon. That was far before any other brand made any announcements or intentions about what they planned to do. Mm-hmm. So what could .canon do with this space? Well, there's several things you could do that can be very beneficial to companies. One is that you really show your brand extremely well. This is a unique way to do it. You know, .canon, there's no longer going to be a .com that's clouding the marketing message or the brand that you want to convey. It's right there. It's .com. Mm-hmm. Two is that from a distributor type perspective, as you know, there's plenty of sites on the internet that have fake goods or counterfeit goods or gray market goods that may not be covered by warranties and the like. Canon could, for example, and this is just my speculation, I don't know, but Canon could, for example, set up a domain name space where only their authorized distributors are allowed to have web pages, and then they can have the classy or the classic mantra, if it doesn't say .canon, it's not the real thing. So there's a way to sort of control your distributors or resellers and really emphasize, you know, an authentic network of dealers with the use of one of these generic top-level domains. The third thing
I was just going to say, really quick, the third thing
that's interesting are the technological innovations that this makes possible. So say, for example, Canon has cameras, and again, this is just pure speculation on my part. If Canon makes cameras, such as an AE-1 camera, they could have in the welcome package, you know, and all the software you install on your computer to get your camera up and running, they could actually have users, such as Richard Stockton, log in and register a .canon web page. And what would happen is all of my pictures, for example, could go wirelessly automatically from my camera all the way up to richardstockton.canon, and I could just log on to that page, and I could see my pictures. And I could, for example, integrate them with Facebook or integrate them with something else so that things could automatically pull from that .canon website. So you can actually give your customers their own domain name pages.
So who would own these? I mean, you've mentioned Canon, and as you talked about a big company, and I'm thinking of all the big ones, Microsoft, Walmart, Apple, you know, and the Google, and it goes on and on and on. Would these companies actually own that top-level domain, or is it – so would I have to pay a fee to them, or is it open to everybody, just like a .com is currently open to everybody?
The registry operator, so in other words, the person, the organization that applies to register for the generic top-level domain, has a wide latitude and wide discretion to be able to set the rules. So, for example, Canon could say, you know what, we're going to start this registry, but we want to use it as an intranet. We don't want this to involve our customers or any outside parties. We want to use it just for our own personal intranet. At Canon, and therefore all the registrants of the actual domain names are going to be Canon, and that's, you know, and we're going to restrict it to that. That's one possible scenario. There are other possible scenarios where the actual users would own the, they would be listed as the registrant of the domain name. So Richard Stockton could be the owner of richardstockton.canon. There's a lot of ways to do it. Now, there are some advantages and disadvantages to doing it different ways, and some important caveats, but that's the overall sense, and the whole thing about this generic top-level domain process is that it's giving companies and organizations the opportunity to set up these rules the way that they think will best serve their own business interests.
Now, I know that in January, early January, I think on the 12th, organizations can apply to operate their own generic top-level domain, and then there's a period of time after that where there's going to be some opportunity to lodge objections. What does a company need to worry about here in terms of getting there first? And or secondly, I know we have a lot of people who have cyber squatted names and domains and now sell them for large sums of money. So, you know, if I wanted to get Canon and somebody got there before me and now they want to sell it to me for $1 million, what's the process here going to look like for businesses?
Great question. All right. So the threshold thing is that to apply for a generic top-level domain, you're correct. The application period opens January 12th, and it closes on April 12th. To apply, the application fee is $185,000. Now, that's just the fee to –
Well, that's going
to
weed out a few people right there.
It sure will, and, you know, it's the source of controversy because some people are saying this is nothing more than a money-making venture to ICANN, because if they're going to get 500 applications at $185K apiece, that's almost $90 million just as a lump sum payment to ICANN. Their current budget is $70 million. So you can draw your own conclusions there, but that's one of the criticisms of this process. But, yes, the fee is $185,000, and you need to meet certain requirements. So, and these are designed to weed out cyber squatters and the like. So, for example, you need to show the requisite technical, administrative, and financial wherewithal to be able to run a registry. It's a big endeavor. Along these lines, companies like Canon will probably partner with a registry operator already. A registry runs like a .com domain space. You know, that's VeriSign is the name of that company. And they may partner with these organizations to be able to show that they have the technical capability. They also need the financial wherewithal, and that doesn't just include writing a check for $185,000. They have to be able to show that they can meet the annual ongoing payments, which will include almost a $25,000 payment annually to ICANN, as well as, you know, everything you need to keep the servers on and the lights on and the server room and the like. So you need to demonstrate those capabilities. So with all this stuff, it's hoped that the amount of sinister cyber squatters getting into this process won't be able to make it through, at least overtly, like they can, because as like they can now under the current domain name system, you know, anybody can register any .com domain name and they can hide in China and and write you cryptic messages demanding millions of dollars for your domain name. And you can go to arbitration, but there's limits to what you can do. Here, it's hoped that the vetting of the applicants will, and this is ICANN's position, it's hoped that the vetting of the applicants will keep opportunism to a minimum. Now, the trademark brand owner community and a lot of others are very suspicious of this and don't think that ICANN has those mechanisms in place. But the fact of the matter is that this is probably going to happen, so the trademark community is going to have to deal with it regardless of what they feel about it.
So you just, when you described this to me, Joe the plumber that lives in Chicago is not going to be likely to go out and buy Chicago or plumber as his generic top-level domain.
I'm sorry, David, let me clarify. So what I meant was that so the generic top-level domain, so .chicago, that's not something Joe the plumber would probably go out and do. However, the registry operator for .chicago, whether it's the city of Chicago or some consortium, you know, with a technical registry company involved in it, they may offer .chicago domain names to Joe the plumber.
Gotcha. So for the small business, it's more of wait and see what happens and then maybe make some strategic decisions in terms of how I position my company online given the new available top-level domains that might be out there. But for a larger business that could afford these fees and the ongoing maintenance and sustainability of that registry, this is going to be a strategic decision of whether or not they want to create, as you described in the Canon example, a space internally for their customer or for their employees, like an intranet, or perhaps create a branded community which they own, in essence, with their top-level domain. Is that right?
That's correct, and there are a couple of key pitfalls here that these big companies need to be aware of.
Okay.
The first is that the application period runs from January to April. It ends on April 12th. This is the only application period that is planned. Now, while I think that ICANN would love to have multiple periods, you know, each time generating 500 new applications and another $90 million in revenue into ICANN's pockets for conducting the application process and review, my sense is that there will be a lot of outcry about this process and that we will not see another application period for quite some time. The lesson being, if you're going to do this, you need to do it between the January and April timeframe. You may not get another shot. I wouldn't bet the farm on getting another shot.
Okay.
The second pitfall about it is that you may not want to register a generic top-level domain. You may be Red Widget Company and happy with your business model and don't see any need for this and it's expensive, but you may be very concerned about what your competitor, Blue Widget Company, is doing. But you're not going to actually see if Blue Widget Company applies for any generic top-level domains until after the application period closes. And specifically, it looks like it's going to be May 1st that Blue Widget's company's application would become public. Now, there are things you can do after that process, but if you don't have your own application pending, you may be in trouble. So if you wanted .widget, and Blue decided they wanted .widget, but only Blue applied, you have a little bit more of a limitation on what you can do. You're not completely up the creek without a paddle, But you do have a less free range of motion to be able to counter Blue's applications. So you need to think about what you think your competitors may do, and you need to assess the landscape here to see if this is something that you really ought to investigate.
And, of course, this is going to require the expertise of somebody like you. Where does the person go? Is this a trademark? Is this an Internet person? Is this a brand person? Is it just their general counsel? Where do they go in their company, and where does that company go for expert advice? Who are they looking for?
This is one of the big conundrums with this process, because if you look at the overall picture here of how this may change the face of the Internet, which has become so critical to businesses, it needs to involve everyone at the company. It seems that most of the interest I see from this right now is from lawyers, because lawyers are obviously drafting these rules and are very sensitive to these issues, and traditionally have been the guardians of the brand, you know, from a legal standpoint, and have been dealing with the domain name issues, for example. But it really, you know, it needs to start with marketing. People need to daydream about the possibilities here. I mean, do they want this visionary brand? Does that work with their model for their marketing plan? Does it, and then you need to talk to the technical people and say, you know, what are you envisioning that we could do? You know, can you see any opportunities with this? Like what I was mentioning about the cameras and how you could have, you know, web pages on the Canon space. So it needs to involve technical people. It may need to involve your IT staff who can look and say, you know, this is something that I'm not sure we could do in-house. And, of course, it has to involve your financial people, because you've got to see you've got to plan and budget for this, because this is not a cheap expense. And obviously steering the ship, you have to have your management. So it's the type of thing that someone in the organization needs to instigate or light a spark on. But all members, I'd recommend that all members in those various constituencies within the company get involved, because it's a cross departmental decision, and it implicates a lot of factors. And this, I think, is a serious barrier to entry for a lot of companies, because there are very few things that require all of these diverse entities to get together and talk about.
So, Richard, we get all the entities together, we make our application. Is there a date set for when all of these new generic top-level domains come into effect?
The earliest could be mid to late 2013. However, and this is one point we didn't talk about with the application process, there is the possibility for ICANN, who's reviewing the applications, to extend their evaluation. If they're not sure about everything you've put in your application, if it's not clear that you are clearly capable of doing this, they can extend their evaluation. That would go at least until April of 2013. On the other side of things, third parties have the opportunity to object on various grounds to applications for generic top-level domains. In those situations, it's possible the process could drag out as well. So it could be 2014 before you actually see one of these delegations. And by delegation, I mean that's when ICANN turns on the switch and allows your registry to start registering domain names, and then Internet users consequently can go to richardstockton.canon and see what the domain name, you know, what's on the domain name page.
Gotcha. I've been talking with Richard Stockton. He is a trademark and domain name legal expert, and he works at Banner Witkoff. That's at bannerwitkoff.com for now, at least, until we find out what happens with these generic top-level domains. And, Richard, thank you so much for joining us on the call today. I really appreciate your expertise.
Sure, David. And if I could just add, on our website are some PowerPoint slides, if anyone is interested, sort of summing up this process in a little bit more detail.
Great. What is that website, and where can they find those?
The website is bannerwitkoff.com, you know, where it's just banner like the sign, W-I-T-C-O-F-F as in Frank.com.
Excellent. Thank you, Richard. And thank you, everyone, for joining us on the American Marketing Association's Marketing Power podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the RSS feed on marketingpower.com. That way you keep in touch with great resources and information, breaking news like what we've had today with Richard. And also, don't forget to check out the AMA's newest way to deliver the latest in industry trends and marketing insights and career tips to you. That's at AMA TV. So marketingpower.com/AMA TV. Until next time, I have been your host, David Kennard. Thanks for joining us.